Yesterday we heard from a grieving father who lost his son to drugs a year ago and was holding a service to raise awareness for his One Pill Can Kill campaign. William Byrne's son, Jamie, died after taking an ecstasy tablet.
And the talks that I do around schools and clubs and what have you, what I try to do is I try to tell them what it's like for the family members if they take something, whether it's a tablet or a line of coke or whatever it may be, and they die.
And in some of these talks that you do, you've held up your son's ashes.
I have, yes. I have a box of his ashes too. And a lot of people may find it brutal, but at the end of the day, trust is brutal. There's no ifs or buts. There's no sugar-coated pills, excuse the pun. It's brutal. It's death.
Well, after that, we were shocked to hear yesterday, certainly I was, that from callers who were contacting the programme to say that drugs are being openly dealt outside schools. Joining me now is Detective Chief Superintendent Tim Mayers, head of the PSNI's Organised Crime Branch. Good morning to you, Tim.
Good morning, Steve.
Give us a sense of the extent of the drug problem in Northern Ireland, Tim.
Okay, well, I'll maybe start to talk about those who suffer as a result of drug use, because I think when you open with William's powerful story, you can't help but be affected by that. In 2015, the year 2015, there were 144 people lost their lives as a result of drugs. What we saw last year then in 2016 was a slight reduction in that, but still 129 people who, as a result of drugs, lost their lives. That's 129 families who were bereaved as a result of this. To give some perspective, though, in those 2 years, the impact of alcohol-related deaths were nearly double at 310. And tragically, and I think as you've referenced yourself, Stephen, we saw over 300 people lost their lives to suicide during that time as well. And the reason I give you those three sets of figures whenever we talk about the harm caused by drugs is there is a larger issue here around mental health and around the support to the most vulnerable people in our society. And often we focus on the offenders and what we are doing, and quite rightly on our side, around how we limit the supply of drugs. But I think critically, any debate that starts to talk about the harm of drugs has to start with how we support the most vulnerable people in our society who suffer from mental health issues primarily.
You know, is the trend changing in how drugs are dealt in Northern Ireland and the people taking them, age groups and accessibility?
We would see, certainly, I think, and it's no great surprise to your listeners that the internet in particular has had a massive impact on the nature of drugs supply on the illegal drug side, and we see an awful lot more drugs being supplied through the post and purchased on the dark web. Tragically, though, when we look at those sets of drugs deaths, the majority of those still relate to prescription drugs, prescription medication that people are either getting prescribed to them or obtaining illicitly and are using without the supervision of a medical professional. And I suppose often we will quite rightly focus on a lot of those illegal drugs, but actually the biggest killers for us here in Northern Ireland are alcohol and the likes of Tramadol and Lyrica. And you know, it's a key element as government partners and with our partners in the third sector to work really hard to help educate people about that misuse of drugs, but also to limit the supply of those substances.
Well, where are they getting those prescription drugs from?
Well, there's a range of sources. So there's a legitimate market, if you will. So drugs that are prescribed. So perhaps a family member is being prescribed a quantity of painkillers or other medication, and those are being diverted within the family home to somebody. Maybe that person themselves is becoming addicted and is seeking repeat prescriptions. Alternatively, people are moving those drugs then out of those prescription environments and selling them. And there is indeed, and you'll have seen recently, an operation by colleagues up in Derry City and Strabane in England, where there was a large quantity of prescription drugs seized, and they were to be imported into Northern Ireland to be sold essentially on the black market to people.
I'm looking at some of the figures we have here around your activity around enforcing action against drug offences.
Yeah.
The latest figures I have is for 2015-16, and I'm seeing here for a Class A substance. So a Class A substance is heroin, right? Stuff like that.
Yes, heroin, cocaine. Yeah, that sort of substance.
There was a 14-year-old arrested for heroin, 14 years of age. or cocaine in the year 2015-16, there were 5 15-year-olds arrested for the same offence.
Mm.
Now, I am naive, but my goodness, 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds, Tim.
Well, I think what that indicates, Stephen, is the change in the nature of, I guess, drugs in Northern Ireland. And I was speaking to a colleague yesterday who was in the drug squad back in the 1990s when drugs deaths and the availability of illegal drugs in Northern Ireland were exceptionally rare. And that's not the society we live in anymore. Drugs are now, at times, as readily available as alcohol. And you see that now in young people who traditionally, I guess, at 14, 15, we would have been concerned about their dependency or use of alcohol. We are now seeing drugs also featuring there. But that's one of the main reasons why, with public health and others, we're very committed to early education so that people are aware of the dangers of substance abuse. And often you'll see, again, you know, the presence of drugs, the presence of alcohol in young people is linked to wider issues, and be those issues in household and more complex support and care issues. Those young people are vulnerable and often turn to drugs.
What's class B?
So class A covers off... Oh, you're going to get me now, Stephen. I'm going to have to get out all the categories. Class A, it's done on a risk basis. So your class A is the likes of your cocaine and your heroin and some of those more serious drugs. And those are illegal drugs that are categorised at that. When you get to class C, that's where you talk about...
No, class B. I'm just wondering what class B are. Yeah.
I don't have the answer for you, but I can find out for you.
All right. No, I'm just... I don't know. Maybe it's excess here or something like that. But it says here 22, 32... 37-year-old, 5 13-year-olds were arrested for Class B in 2015-16, 10 14-year-olds, 22 15-year-olds.
Yeah.
Are young people being actively targeted by drug dealers?
So that is certainly a concern, and I guess you and your listeners may be aware of a lot of the coverage in England and Wales at the moment around what they refer to as county lines, where essentially young people in the care system are being exploited for the purposes of a wide range of activity, but including the supply and the dealing of drugs. It's not something that we see as consistently in Northern Ireland, but it is something we are certainly working with the National Crime Agency, who have the national lead on that, to continue to monitor. I suppose there's two sides to this, Stephen. So there are those young people who are turning to drugs and other substances as a coping mechanism, and there are those then who are falling into the control and the exploitation of organised crime groups. And we are concerned about both, but obviously as a police service, we would have a very, very active role in focusing on the second one, which would be the use by organised crime groups of vulnerable people. And young people is one of those categories that we see in England and Wales, less so here, but also the likes of people being trafficked into the country with the promise of legitimate work. And when they get here, actually that work is an involvement in the drugs trade.
When you talk about organised crime, you talk about paramilitaries?
I talk across the whole gambit. So we would assess that about 75% roughly of our organised crime groups in Northern Ireland are involved in drugs. It is the primary commodity that these groups still deal in, but that is not their exclusive commodity. When we talk about paramilitary groups, certainly, and we've spoken before about the work of the Paramilitary Crime Task Force, and a large quantity of the assets and the material that we're seizing in those positions include drugs, certainly.
How big a grip do the paramilitaries have on drugs in Northern Ireland?
Well, as you'll appreciate, to talk of the paramilitaries is very sweeping. I would see a number of groups who are very, very active in the drugs trade and in the areas that they operate in, they control that drugs trade. I think it's one of the main reasons we're keen to stop talking about paramilitaries, because it gives them some form of legitimacy. They are drug dealers and they're organised criminals, and they're supplying drugs into the very communities that they would allege that they protect.
I'm not sure paramilitaries gives them any cover of legitimacy, does it?
Well, I don't think so, and you don't, but I think some people do. And I think the point is that they're no different from the large gangs operating in Dublin or Liverpool. And whilst they may try to claim to be defenders of their community, it's quite clear that they're selling this stuff into their community.
And would this be the standard ABC? Would there be a drugs lord, so to speak, one individual controlling that area?
So what we would say is it varies. It might help to sort of outline. We would tend to look at drugs on the drug supply side at three levels. So you have your importation. That's the movement of large quantities of drugs into the country. And you'll have seen really big success by our colleagues in Garda last week, where they seized millions of pounds worth of cannabis and cocaine in Southern Ireland. We would then look at the tier below that would be the organised crime groups, and they're the ones who move those smaller quantities as they break the large imported amounts down. They move those into communities and supply them out then for onward sales. So they're kind of your middle people. And then you see at the street level those people involved in dealing. And often those dealers can also be users. And in a way, it becomes a lot more complex. So from an organised crime group level, as I've said, we would see about three quarters. Of our organised crime groups involved in bringing this in.
Yeah, but I'm kind of asking a different question, Tim. I'm asking,
okay,
look, is you know, if you take Belfast for example,
yeah.
Is Belfast as a whole controlled by one individual? Is it split down into east, west, south, north, or how does it work in our capital city here?
I suppose the best way to describe it, well, the simple answer to that would be no. We don't identify a sort of a kingpin run the whole operation. What we do see is, I suppose, the drugs market works very much like any business market. There will be competitors trying to corner the market on certain types of drugs. They'll try and undercut each other price-wise. Generally, in a position where they can all work together and cooperate, there is no violence. But unlike other businesses where drugs groups fall out, then you see an awful lot of violence, and that can be seen particularly very close to us in Dublin, where you see very high levels of murder as a result of
conflict. So they do work with each other. They have agreements of territory, do they?
Yeah, I mean, I think the two big motivators for anybody involved in organised crime are power and greed. And where people identify that there are benefits in working together, they'll do that. And again, I suppose it's to make that point that some of these people manage to create, and I'm not just talking on the paramilitary side, I'm talking wider, manage to create a kind of a Robin Hood type credibility within their communities. They sometimes spread some of that power and reach out to try and create a charitable, you know, veneer. But in reality, these people are about making money, and they're about, you know, holding coercive power over communities.
What do you mean charitable veneer? What do you mean?
Sorry, say that again, Stephen.
What do you mean charitable veneer?
Oh, well, I mean, if you look back through the history of organised crime, you'll often see that those criminals, I mean, you look at the likes of Pablo Escobar and others, who almost took on a community role, became seen by communities as somebody that they valued and supported. But the reality was that was a veneer for an exceptionally violent and corrupt system.
And are you saying that's happening here in Northern Ireland?
I think we would see it less so specifically in Northern Ireland. I think again,
but you're talking about the context of Northern Ireland, and you're bringing this up. So, are there people
from a paramilitary perspective? Yes, absolutely.
I mean, so there are people with a veneer of community groups and a veneer of helping our local communities who are actually dealing drugs into the community and to the children. Is there?
Well, I think to put it, there are groups who would claim to be taking action against drug dealers, and it's quite clear that they are actively involved in that market. And I think that they would claim to their community that they are there to protect that community and stand up for them. But what they're actually doing is managing a market, often to their own financial benefit and in order to retain control.
Who are you talking about in terms of groups? Paramilitaries or who?
Yes. Well, I mean, primarily in Northern Ireland, that would be associated with paramilitary groups, and they tend to retain that market, both on the Loyalist and the Republican side.
Which groups?
I'm not going to start to get into specific names here, but I mean,
why are you reluctant to, Tim? If it's paramilitary groups, why wouldn't you tell the community which paramilitary groups are?
Well, because I think
doing this,
it's indicative of all of the groups that are involved in this, Stephen. I don't think there's any benefit in starting to get into talking about individual groups, because I think actually, if I start to talk about an individual group, I may leave another group out. And the fact is that this is a factor that we see in paramilitary organised crime in Northern Ireland, that people try to create credibility within their communities. They try to present themselves as community leaders, but often they do that through violence. And you'll have seen yesterday a lot of the coverage by the Stop Attacks Forum, bringing the focus on paramilitary-style attacks on young people. And that's just another strong indicator of how these people have the arrogance to believe that they have the authority to exercise justice in their communities. And yet, in reality, they're just trying to control these communities through fear.
Let's deal, if we can, with what came up with our callers yesterday on the programme. People contacting this programme to tell us that schools are being targeted and people are openly dealing outside schools. Now, if that, I said I didn't believe it because it's quite extraordinary if that's happening on a regular basis. What's your feel for that?
Well, I mean, we would often, it wouldn't be unheard of to get reports of people, of suspicions of people dealing drugs outside schools. If you're asking me, am I seeing a dramatic increase in it or a change in trends around that, it's certainly not something I'm seeing. However, if people are seeing that, we really encourage them to report it to the police. We have worked with individual schools when they have identified issues around young people within their schools taking drugs, and we've worked on education and other approaches to try and deal with that. And, you know, again, I see a lot of really responsible leadership by teachers and schools around educating young people around this. But the reality is, people who are looking to sell drugs will look at every opportunity to do that. And, you know, we would see them selling outside schools. We would see them potentially selling, you know, where they know that people with dependency issues gather, because they see them as a vulnerable market.
Just some feedback to you. There are some people contacting us this morning. Some of the language isn't too appropriate, saying that they can't believe that you're saying there's no kingpin, that people on the ground can name who the kingpin is, who is running and controlling drugs in certain areas of Belfast.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, we can identify people who manage individual areas.
Asked you that earlier on, and you said there were no actual individuals controlling the drugs.
No, sorry. Well, I misunderstood. Your question was there a kingpin running Belfast? From my perspective, there isn't.
Is there a kingpin running the different areas of Belfast? My question was east, south, north and west, I think is what I said. And some of our callers are saying, you know, the dogs in the street know who these people are.
Yeah, and I mean, again, we monitor and we target an awful lot of organised crime groups within Belfast. I wouldn't go as far as to say they're nicely split up into north, south, east and west. We see an awful lot of crossover. As I said, they often focus more around the types of drugs that they're selling, the markets that they're looking at. But yes, absolutely. I mean, when we talk about organised crime groups, there are senior people within those groups. We work to target them. We work with NCA and others, that if we're unable to create a criminal case, that we'll look at the civil case around removing those assets from them. But again, if people are ringing you and the dogs in the street know those names, we're very, very grateful to take a call either to the police service or to Crime Stoppers to make sure
that... But do you know who these people are? Do you know who the senior drug dealers, the people who are controlling the area, who rule by fear, who say yes or no to people being shot around drugs, people being intimidated, that are controlling it coming out in and out of Belfast? Now, obviously, you're trying to put those people away. Maybe you haven't been able to gather enough evidence, but do you know who they are?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, from our perspective, as I've talked about, we retain an oversight of who we believe are the organised crime groups within Northern Ireland and who the members of those groups and what their positions are within those groups.
Have you got the resources to bring them down, Tim?
Well, yeah. And I mean, I think if you even look over the weekend, Stephen, you know, a seizure of £170,000 worth of drugs in a car in Banbridge, over £30,000 worth of Xanax in North Belfast. We're having successes.
Sure, that's
we are targeting these individuals.
That's the drugs. I guess the question is, when's an example to the public of the last high profile, you know, linchpin in the drugs trade in Northern Ireland, who you've taken out, a very senior person within this drugs market, who are controlling it?
Well, I mean, you'll have been aware in May of this year that we ran a large operation over a number of days and involved somewhere around 15, 20 searches across Northern Ireland. That's led to the charges of six people. That matters before the courts. So a lot of these matters we're not able to discuss in greater depth. But from my perspective, I feel that we're having consistent success against a number of these groups. The importation matter we work on continually with the NCA and with An Garda Síochána. And you've got to be aware, you know, the success that the guards had last week in their massive seizure, I would assess that it's likely that some of those drugs would have come north. So from the perspective of, it's not just the successes within Northern Ireland, it's successes across Europe that are critical to ensuring that we frustrate the supply of drugs into Northern Ireland.
Tim, we appreciate you coming on this morning. Thank you very much indeed, sir.
No problem, Stephen. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So that was really interesting, actually. That's the Detective Chief Superintendent Tim Mayers, who's head of the PSNI's Organised Crime Branch, 0330 80 55 55. Jim, morning to you, Jim.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
Can't believe a police officer like that. If he's top of his game, that's very poor for the people of Northern Ireland, for a simple reason. He contradicted himself in that interview about three or four times. The police are well aware who's running these, to quote you, geese kingpins are in the areas of Northern Ireland. You specifically asked about Belfast. The police know who they are. The dogs in the street know who they are. But what are they doing about it? Nothing.
Well, you've heard him explain that he brought
what
people...
What did he explain? We had George Hamilton, Chief Constable, about 2 months ago come out and say they're going to crack down, they're going to take out a certain organisation and they're going to make dramatic...
We've heard him explain that they've brought people in front of the courts recently, there are charges pending, we can't talk about those cases.
You asked a question, what kingpin, because there is kingpins oversee all this here, so there is individuals who are dominant in these areas. You asked a question, what kingpin have you brought down, and he... Nobody. But we had George Hamilton about 2-3 months ago come out and say he's going to take out a certain organisation and crack down and get them under control and take them out of business. What's happened? Nothing. And with all due respect, see that £30,000 drugs that was caught in £170,000? Absolutely fantastic that drugs were caught. But that's nothing in the overall picture of drugs that have been brought into our wee country. And the people who are suffering is the children. Kids are getting sold readily. When we were growing up, you had your bottle of cider, you had your carrot, now it's drugs. It's an absolute disgrace. And see, for the police, the police have infiltrated these here drug dealers. There's that many informants probably within these here organisations. It's not in their interest to arrest because they're getting too much information. A police man there to me, I was just a very, very poor interview regarding the situation because it's our children who suffer in these situations. You had a man on yesterday whose son lost his life. Terrible.
Jim, thank you. Stuart and Clougher. Morning, Stuart.
Yeah, good morning, Stephen. I'll make it very brief. I'm sure there's a lot of people more experienced than me to talk about this problem. But listen, these guys that are these kingpins, whatever you want to call them, drug dealers, I mean, I'm sure most of them have families of their own. They have children in around the ages that they're distributing drugs to. They have no conscience to what they have to ask of their parents. They have to deal with a child dying through the drugs. I was on holiday recently and I seen two girls as young as 14 and they were doing solvent abuse.
What's the answer here, Stuart?
The answer is that, you know what I mean, these guys have to be named and shamed, and anyone who has any information, they should be bringing it forward to the proper authorities to get these boys weeded out. Because it's absolutely disgrace where mum and dad, where that man had to speak on your radio show yesterday morning about losing his son due to one tablet. The fella probably wasn't a drug user at all. Probably in with a group of lads and decided, I'll be pretty harmless, stick one wee tablet, don't do you no harm. But shockingly it did. He lost his life. And I have a daughter at 22, a son at 17, and a son at 18. And I would never like to think that anyone would be pushing drugs to them.
It's scary, isn't it?
It's scary. It's scary, and I feel for that man. I feel for anyone who have lost a child due to drugs. When you lose a child in life, doesn't matter what it is to, it's one of those horrible things can happen to you when you bury one of your own children.
I'm just looking because we asked the police, we've got the figures here for, this wasn't the police, the Education Authority, for the number of suspensions. Again, this is referring to 2015-16 for substance abuse, right? There were 135 young people in Northern Ireland, 135 young people who were suspended in 1 year because of substance abuse. And if you compare that to alcohol, and this is where it gets really interesting, 49. So we're talking here about nearly threefold the amount of kids last year, 2015-16, suspended for substance abuse compared to alcohol abuse. And I think that's an indication of how times are changing. Philip in Belfast. Morning, Philip.
Morning, Stephen. How are you?
Go ahead, Phil. But even that stat alone, nearly three times the amount of pupils suspended in 2015-16 for substance abuse to alcohol abuse. 49 alcohol abuse, 135 substance abuse, Philip.
It's crazy, Stephen. See, the more I think about it, because I'm 40 years old and I use drugs mostly at the age of 16 and 17. And I ruined my life, you know. I had an impressionable time, because I'm still suffering from mental health problems. And I just feel really sorry for young people. And hopefully there might be one or two listening and they hear this, you know, because I think it's just devastating. There was a whole string of things around why I took drugs at that age.
Stephen. What kind of drugs were you taking?
Everything except for the really high end, sort of the injections and stuff like that, you know. And it was mostly like tablets and powder and stuff like that, you know.
And what did it do to you, Philip, long term? What's it done to you?
Stephen, I suffer from stress and anxiety. I have problems getting on with people, you know. And I think it's related to that, because I did use, whenever I say I use quite a lot, it was like every couple of weeks I went to a certain nightclub in Port Rush, you know, and it was sort of, it just affected me sort of, you know. And I'm thinking, like, it's really sad to think that young people are doing this, because they have their whole lives ahead of them, you know. I find it difficult holding down jobs and stuff like that, and just social interaction and stuff like that, you know.
What's the answer?
I don't know what the answer is, Stephen. I think it's the community having to say to the police about it, you know. It's down to the community and the police.
And how did you stop, Philip?
Stephen, I realised what it was doing to me. I knew it was affecting me, you know. I knew it was affecting me mentally. It was affecting my health. It was affecting, I couldn't hold down jobs. I was starting to think like I'm a failure and all this sort of thing, you know, and family problems. So I think if people see the devastation that it causes, it's just a trail of devastation, you know.